Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
is
overdrawn.
Your unemployment benefits ran out 2 weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
Checks left. Checks
2 weeks
left.
Ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Mahal in Payson, Arizona. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And boy, do we have an incredible broadcast today and season for you for the rest of the year. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the broadcast. Each and every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio show, and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of creating financial wellness today and the greater purpose of financial independence for tomorrow and into the future. We do this with several segments on the show, of which you will hear them today. And I'm so excited because we have Dr. Nathaniel Brandon joining us for our Investor's Edge segment. And he's more of a key guest than an Investor's Edge guest, but we're going to run him in the first hour for the whole hour because he is so prophetic and he is going to help you understand the foundation of this week's key. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, as always, welcome to the broadcast. And this show is founded on the principles from The Keys to Riches. And The Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts I wrote that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do that one key at a time, 1 week at a time. And this week's key, our foundational key, is acceptance and affirmation. The acknowledgement of having challenges in our lives is key to being able to solve them. But if we live in a state of denial, if we refuse to take responsibility for the things going on in our lives and allow things to happen to us as opposed to being in control, we're never going to get in control. And this all circles around how we feel about ourselves. So acceptance and affirmation, this key was written to help you identify what it is about money, whether you went out and made mistakes and acknowledge the fact that you really don't know what you need to know about money, or you're just starting out for the first time and you haven't had a chance to make any mistakes, but you don't want to. And you want to arm yourself with enough information to create a harmonious financial life, because life is not about money, but life has money as a tool. Most people think of money as a goal, but money is specifically a tool, and it is to create whatever it is you desire in your life. And the more money you have, the more freedom you have to do what you want, to create the experiences in your life to enrich your life and that of your family members. The more money you have, the more you can do with your children, the more you can teach them, the more things you can surround their lives with to help their knowledge grow and expand, the more travel you can do, the more exploring, and the more passion you can seek in your life, the more money you have. So it's not about specifically money or having money, but it's about what you can do with it as a tool. And realizing that money is a significant part of our lives, whether we choose to deny that or not, we must utilize money, and we must know how to utilize money in order to be successful. Otherwise, it's going to plague us for our entire lives, and money will always be problems and present and challenge in our life. So this week's key helps us identify that maybe we don't know enough, and we need to take that first step by realizing that we need to correct our patterns and beliefs about money. So acceptance and affirmation is all about that. And we have Dr. Nathaniel Brannon, who is the father of the self-esteem movement. He is also a pillar of the self-esteem community, and he has done some incredible works to illustrate what self-esteem is. And he doesn't walk on water. He's had his own challenges with self-esteem. And for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Nathaniel Brannon, he is the intellectual heir to Ayn Rand. And you know you've heard me, for the regular listeners, talk about her several times and how she has shaped my life. So I'm so excited for two reasons. One, because of the self-esteem portion, but because this man is a direct connection to who I am as a person because of the writings and works of Ayn Rand. And we are going to ask some pointed questions about that. So while he has some incredible work and it's something to follow, it was a trial and error system, just like my money management system came about by trial and error and refining my techniques. He has had some significant challenges over the years, and so my girlfriend is going to be joining us here shortly, and we're going to talk about some of those failings, and specifically with regard to his relationship with Ayn Rand. And I think that will give you some insight, because he is not just saying, you know, do as I say. He's like, I did wrong, and now I know the right path. Or at least we'll see if we can get him to admit some of those things. It'll be interesting. Anyway, I'm so excited to move forward in today's broadcast with all of that. Now, if you have not already done so, you need to surf over to www.unlockyourwealth.com and claim your free membership at the website, because with that, you will receive today's featured strategy for the next 24 hours free. It's always available to our paid members, but since we are trying to encourage proper money management, and if you don't have the finances to spend, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have the tools available. So we have made those available in our key membership. So surf over to www.unlockyourwealth.com. Sign up for the electronic magazine that's emailed each week. By signing up, you have access to all of our previous broadcasts, so you can go back and seek out previous information. You can also download broadcasts to your iPod or MP3 player or computer, wherever you want to listen to it, so you can listen to them over and over. That is such an incredible value about what we have here with the Unlock Your Wealth radio program on Blog Talk Radio, is the ability to listen to over and over the broadcast. So if you don't catch it live, no big deal. If you caught it live and need further contemplation about the information, no problem. Listen to it again. That's what's so great about it. And you can get all of our resources, great articles, great interviews, hot sheets from all of our previous show guests, which are the digested version of the interviews, giving you all of the golden nuggets that they talk about in the interviews. So make sure that you surf on over, because today's worksheet, our success strategy today, is all going to be about this week's key, acceptance and affirmation, and the affirmation process, which we'll go into in the second hour. We also have some great Minutes on Your Money articles coming up today, by the way. 6 bold ways to go frugal and why saving money can be risky. What? What do you mean? I thought this was all about saving money. Well, this is about building wealth. Saving money is one element, but let's see what that article has to share with us. That's all coming up on this week's show. By the way, we have a fabulous trivia question for you. It's kind of funny. In the office, the illustrious Kristen Hunn, who is not sitting in the production chair, as a matter of fact, Elena DeFiore, is pinch hitting for her. She is your chat room moderator as well as our call and trivia question screener. But she was saying, well, we don't have a trivia question, right, because we had free publicity day. And I said, wrong. The trivia question is, name one of the products or services that called in to participate in free publicity day. And for those of you that missed it, you missed out on a lot, because Free Publicity Day was all about supporting the men and women of the mind. It was our tribute to Atlas Shrugged and Ayn Rand and Nathaniel Brandon coming on, kicking off this week's show. So the parameters, if you didn't get to catch the show, was that you had to be a for-profit company. Nonprofits, political causes, all those people get discounts or free airtime. But I said, you know what? I'm going to celebrate the men and women of the mind. So I said, forget that. So no political causes, no nonprofit organizations, no charities, no nothing, no altruism. We went specifically to celebrate the men of the mind, and we asked for for-profit only companies to call in and promote themselves. And I was so excited. We were able to squeeze, because we only have a half-hour show, we were able to squeeze in 17 of them. And I'm so excited. I'm getting a thumbs up from our next guest coming up. Well, my co-host for the interview. So we have so much coming up in store, so I don't want to continue to blather on. So in that vein, we are going to take a quick, short commercial break, and we will be right back with my co-host coming up, Suzanne Cummins, Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your purveyor of prosperity, and we will be right back with more after this.
Close more sales. Close more sales. Close more sales. Hi, this is Commander Marty Logan from the Top Gun Sales Academy. Are you the best salesperson you can be today? If not, allow us to help you to outpace your competition, your fellow peers, and recession-proof your business. Visit us at www.thetopgunseminars.com, 480-626-5883. Don't make excuses. Make it happen.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And the time is drawing near for Dr. Brandon. But first, I must introduce my co-host. My dear friend, Suzanne Cummins, is going to be joining us today to assist in this interview, because this man has impacted our lives so much. So because of his work and the work that he did alongside Ayn Rand, whom you have heard me, all of the regular listeners have, go on and on about the value that, and the contribution that she brought to my life and has shaped who I am. And I would like to welcome Suzanne Cummins, who teaches full-time about ethics and law at the Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona, where my darling husband and I are going to be adjunct professors next semester. I'm pretty excited about that. She received her Juris Doctorate from Hastings College of Law in 1979, and from 84 to 89, she served as general in-house counsel for Nicolet Instrument Corporation, which was a publicly traded New York Stock Exchange company. Although she's no longer practicing law, she was admitted to the state bars of California, Wisconsin, and Arizona during her legal career. She has written or collaborated on several textbooks, and she has also won both the Eller College and University Awards for her teaching and service, including a prestigious U of A Foundation's Leicester, I don't know if I'm getting that right, and Catherine Sherrill Creative Teaching Award. Welcome to the broadcast, Suzanne.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you for letting me be part of this fabulous interview.
Yes, it will be. The anticipation has just, it's mounting. So I'm looking forward to speaking with him shortly. Tell our listeners briefly about your experiences with the works of Nathaniel Brandon and Ayn Rand.
Well, Ayn Rand I met as a novelist. I met her when I read The Fountainhead, which happened very early in my college career. I wasn't as precocious as you were reading The Fountainhead in high school or Atlas Shrugged at such a young age. The Objectivist newsletter, which Nathaniel participated with, I learned about much later in life, when I 20 years ago, when I began teaching at the University of Arizona. But in between those periods, I became obsessed with following Rand, her philosophy. She brought me to economist Milton Friedman to watch Greenspan in a whole different way, because he was obviously part of that early Rand philosophical movement. I fell in love with the intellectual environment created by these phenomenal minds. Do I agree with everything? No. But do I find them inspirational visionaries? Unquestionably. So that's my relationship.
I feel the same way. I feel like a major part of who I am was shaped by the characters in Atlas Shrugged and also The Fountainhead, and I have always felt, as a woman, which is such a struggle in business, we have to be twice, you know, we have to do twice the work as a man to be considered half a man or something.
To be considered.
And I never felt like that was ever an issue or a problem for me, and I've always worked in male-dominated industries, and I attribute that to the strength and veracity that Rand wrote her characters, Dagny Taggart in Atlas Shrugged and Dominique in The Fountainhead. And because they were such leaders and so passionate and knew who they were and they were so self-assured, that's the kind of woman that I wanted to be. And it never occurred to me to not pursue masculine jobs or professions. I mean, being a stockbroker is certainly not a girly thing to do. And trading and you know, buy and sell and having to convince people that their money is safe with you and you're going to make them more money. I mean, just all of my chosen professions have always been male-dominated, insurance and then mortgages. It was just always kind of a male thing, but I think maybe because of her view of economics and objectivism and her vision as a woman, writing about these passionate, strong women is what drove me to always be involved in different careers that had to do with money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I have chased that almighty dollar that they draw, that Galt draws as a sign in the sky at the end of Atlas Shrugged in the clouds. I think about that. And while this show is a culmination of how poorly I managed the money and had to learn trial by error, and now I've come up with a great system for managing money as a result, making it was never an issue. I have been and always will be fantastic at making money. Keeping it, on the other hand, and growing what I had made was an entirely different subject, because I was influenced early on by modeling my mother, which, as I've shared on this show before, her financial money management system is, if it is on sale or you have a coupon, you are morally obligated to acquire whatever it is, whether or not you need it, whether or not you have 50 at home still in the wrapper, You got to get another one. And so I just did more damage because I made more money. That's the only difference. And I had to go through all of these challenges. And this week's key, starting out, the first thing you have to do is recognize you have a problem. And that's the one thing that I didn't do. Because I was making all of this money, it just masked all the debt that I had accumulated. And I thought, oh, well, that's what rich people did. And I had no idea, no clue how rich people manage their money. Because I thought everybody was flying by the seat of their pants like I was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I sat down and I saw that making minimum payment on credit cards at the time didn't even cover the interest that was accruing every month. And I
Gary, isn't that how your principal balance keeps growing even as you're paying it off?
Yeah, and I was like, well, wait a minute. And then I just saw myself, like, going, what am I doing? And it was when I finally recognized there was a problem, then I was able to fix it. But until I accepted I had a problem, I was just in denial. And this week's key starts out all of the keys. And our specific conversation with Dr. Brandon is about accepting who we are, but knowing that in that acceptance of ourselves, that's what gives us the power to change it. And his book, outside of all of the great stuff that he did with Ayn Rand, is his book on the six pillars of self-esteem gave me an incredible foundation and a better sense of who I was, because it allowed me to look at the raw me, the uncensored me, the naked me in the mirror, all of my flaws right there. And even though I didn't like what I saw, I first took a realistic, conscious look at who I was. And it wasn't until I accepted that that I was able to move to change all those things that I didn't like about myself. So what I'm looking forward to talking to him about is about his six pillars of self-esteem and how they apply. And that's what I'm looking to get out of today's conversation. I know you have a more salacious kind of motive. What are you looking to get out of today's broadcast?
Oh, I think I want to be the gossip columnist. That here's all the dirt of what life was. What was she really like? And what were you really like? And I'll try to sophisticate that up, because you have a much classier show than I'm inclined to participate in terms of how I ask questions. But you can bet that something will slip through that shouldn't.
I'm
going to ask some very personal questions.
And that's okay. You know, it's not often that someone has an opportunity to meet with and chat up the person whom we admire and we have grown and learned from their work. So I don't blame you for wanting to do that. So I don't want to wait any longer, because I know he's waiting on the line. So what I'm going to do is create a little bit of suspense for everybody, and we will be chatting with Dr. Nathaniel Brandon coming up right after these messages. You are listening to Suzanne Cummins on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your purveyor of prosperity, and we'll be right back after this.
There is a massive tax storm coming next year. Dozens of new taxes, rules, regulations, fees, and penalties are arriving. Even the storefront tax preparers are being monitored by the IRS. What can you do? Go directly to www.cohesivetax.com and sign up now for a free strategic tax plan, and you can survive the tax hurricane. That's www.cohesivetax.com.
James Goddard out of Keene, New Hampshire. My website is www.jamesgoddard.com. I'm a retired top real estate agent in the state of New Hampshire and author of the book Freedom for a Day, with the subtitle being, What If You Believe for Just One Day That Everything Would Work Out Perfectly? Is there someone that you care for that you want to see them be able to get more out of life? Do you yourself want to be able to feel and see and understand the beauty that's out there? Well, get yourself a copy of it today. Freedom for a Day. Go to www.jamesgoddard.com.
back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Suzanne Cummins on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And it is that time. Oh, I'm so thrilled, honored, excited. The words just escaped me to tell you or to be able to describe to you what I'm feeling inside. But let's move forward with a PhD in psychology and a background in philosophy. Nathaniel Brandon is a pioneer in the field of self-esteem and personal development. Author, lecturer, and therapist, he is also a corporate consultant who teaches clients how the principles of self-esteem can help them to meet the challenges of modern business. Many of his 17 books have been translated into 18 foreign languages, and worldwide, his books have sold 4 million copies. His books include The Psychology of Self-Esteem, How to Raise Your Self-Esteem, The Art of Living Consciously, The 6 Pillars of Self-Esteem, and his memoir, My Years with Ayn Rand. Ultimately, Nathaniel Brandon is a teacher of values, an advocate and instructor for the potentially autonomous human being in us all. Welcome, Nathaniel Brandon, to today's Unlock Your Wealth radio show. Welcome to the broadcast, Dr. Brandon. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
It's such an honor and a privilege to be able to communicate with somebody who so heavily impacted my life. The work that you and also Ayn Rand did shaped the person that I am today. So first off, I just want to say how grateful I am to have you on the show and to let you know that so many of our listeners have been immersed in your teachings as I go through them each season. And we come upon this week's key, which is acceptance and affirmation. And it's all about starting out by realizing there are issues and addressing those in order to move forward. Because when we're in denial, nothing's going to happen. We can't make change if we don't acknowledge something is going on. And my first question for you, because I see this so much in our listeners and in our United States as a whole, how damaged do you think the United States 20-somethings and all of our incoming labor force after the last 2.5 decades of these mantras from parents saying every child gets a trophy even though they were in last place, and never say no so we don't destroy our child's creativity and self-esteem? You think we're damaged?
I think that we're making a very large mistake to try to protect our children from reality by treating them in ways that they will never be treated like in the workplace.
I think that we've set them up for failure for sure.
I'm sorry?
I feel like we set that generation up for failure for sure.
Yes, exactly what I'm about to say, yes. So it's not helpful at all. It's important, it's important to have respect for the child. It's important to have concern for the child's feelings. Never trying to control by assaulting dignity. There's a whole art form to how to raise and help self-esteem in children, which I'm sure we'll be talking about.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's repairable?
Oh, yes, of course. Almost anything is comparable if granted the fact that the person is self-aware enough to understand that there's a reason why he or she is not especially self-responsible or not self-accepting or not willing to take responsibility for their own choices and actions. Often they need help, they need a good psychotherapist, but That should be the mission, to help children to grow into adult self-esteem.
Do you treat children, Dr. Brandon?
Not anymore. I did somewhat some years ago, but I have the pleasure to be friends with some of the most brilliant teachers of how to inspire self-esteem in children. The late Israeli psychologist Chaim Gnat, whose bestseller, A Teacher and Child, is a masterpiece. Two of his students, Faber and Mazelis, are writing great books on how to grow self-esteem in children. One of them is called How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. It's fantastic. And followed by a sequel, How to Talk So Teenagers Can Listen and Listen So Teenagers Can Talk.
Wonderful.
They should be the Bible. They should be the Bible of any parent.
Mm-hmm.
I try to communicate this in my book, The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. I have a rather long chapter on nurturing self-esteem in children in which I recommend these two authors. And it's doable. It's possible. It's not easy to do alone, although some people do. We don't really know why. But some people have the ability to bounce back from incredible backgrounds in childhood. And they can go a long way by searching the literature, looking for any source that would help them to deepen their own selfless understanding. But if you ask, can anything be done? In principle, yes. Two things you need. Somebody who's self-aware that there's more to life than what he or she is experiencing, and a good therapist or a good counselor to help them on their way.
Well, you have a kind of a reclamation of sorts. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's only within the last several years that you've reclaimed your title of intellectual heir, or as she would say, intellectual heir, to Ayn Rand's legacy. What made you decide? What gave you the strength to restake your claim?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. What made me decide what?
For many years, you never put yourself out there as her intellectual heir after the split. Is that correct? Maybe I'm wrong.
Of course not. Of course you're correct. I never put myself out that way when I was the intellectual heir.
But now you're... name is out there in that manner. You're connected that way, right?
Oh, it's been connected that way for years.
But it's not at your doing?
No.
I didn't realize that.
No, I had nothing. I was talking to a psychologist friend of mine who happened to mention the fact that I said, I wonder why people often call my office and want to know if I'm still alive and practicing. And he said something very interesting. He said, Nathaniel, you've got to realize something. I was already hearing about Nathaniel Brandon relative to Ayn Rand when I was in my 20s at college.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had copies of the NBI newsletter that were saved by the man who hired me for my teaching job because he found them valuable enough to have kept that 25 years in between when I finished school.
Yeah, we wrote a lot. We had a magazine that we both wrote articles for on a monthly basis. So the first million copies of Atlas Shrugged were dedicated to me and her husband. After the break, Nathaniel Brandon was cut from that.
Mm-hmm. So it's not you that's putting... Because just recently, David Kelly has a website. Others have websites naming you as this intellectual heir. I assumed that was your doing, but it's not.
Absolutely not. I would never dream of such a thing.
Interesting.
She came to a falling of the ways. She was mad as hell at me, and we withdrew that from her book, all of which she had a right to do.
Well, Dr. Brandon, you mentioned briefly quoting these other two books in your reference to your work with self-esteem, and I found it an incredible foundation for an individual. If they read any book on self-esteem, I felt like your six pillars of self-esteem really encompassed all aspects of it. Can you briefly describe what the six pillars are?
These have to do with practices, which for years I was preoccupied with the question of what are people doing right when they're growing in self-esteem? What are they doing that's maybe wrong in the ways that deteriorate self-esteem? I was just studying different people, their progress in therapy worked or didn't work. And let me say now, I'll first name the six pillars of self-esteem, and then I'll briefly sketch out what they mean, okay?
All right.
The practice of living consciously. The practice of self-acceptance. The practice of self-responsibility. The practice of self-assertiveness. The practice of living purposefully. The practice of personal integrity. Now, I know you will understand that it's impossible to communicate the depth of these six meanings without much more time than we have time for.
Yes.
I'll briefly just say one or two things. A concern with self-awareness, a concern with knowing and understanding one's feelings. Understanding that a fact is a fact and having respect for facts, whether we like them or not, whether we are take pleasure in them or not. Things are what they are. And a lot of living consciously has to do with respecting reality. It also has to do with many applications to work. For example, I'm concerned with the question of, are my actions in alignment with my goals? Very important test for how consciously we operate. Paying attention to the results which our behavior produces, and do we like those results? It means if a child is talking to us, being present to the encounter. If your boss is talking to, or your spouse, or your friend, or your lawyer talks to you, being present to the encounter.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are very, very brief samples of what I mean by self, by living consciously. Then we go to self-acceptance, which has to do with accepting that my thoughts are my thoughts, whether I like them or not. My feelings are what they are. I accept them in the sense that I don't avoid or deny, not in the sense that I like or admire or approve. This is the trickiest thing to help people to understand. Self-acceptance does not mean praising, admiring, boasting about, or cursing about. It's about just what is it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel what I feel. I think what I think. I've done what I've done. Just respect for what is.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
This is very important because one of the ways that people insert poison into their self-esteem or their lack of it is in trying to say, oh, I'm so stupid, or I'm so... only a rotten person would think what I've just been thinking. Nonsense
mm-hmm.
of that kind where they... It's one thing to say I'm not happy about what I said or did or felt. It's quite another to say that proves what a rat I am.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your book, you talk about... Pardon me?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
On the subject of self-acceptance, you have an exercise that you have your patients do in front of the mirror nude. And why is that so important? Enumerate it for the listeners, but why is that so important for acceptance?
Because people don't want to see how far they may be from their ideal of what a healthy male or female would look like.
Mm-hmm.
They may not like their looks, so it's painful, so they avoid it as much as they can. And what I'm teaching there is self-acceptance. Can I just accept the fact that's me? I wish I were 15 pounds lighter, but I'm not. This is me. This is me today. I can't say whether it will be the same next year.
Mm-hmm. I find so much power in that simple exercise.
Thank you for being aware of that.
Yeah, I like to think that I live consciously and that I am accepting of myself, but I went and I did that exercise, and it was very profound. I felt like there are things that I've been avoiding that I hadn't looked at in a while, and they're not as I had envisioned myself. You know, I'm getting older, and I don't look like that 18-year-old anymore. And that was very uncomfortable, I think, because we hold ourselves in this particular ideal. And I felt that once I did that, I felt so much power in that simple exercise.
And take another example of a different kind of thing entirely. I was running a group one day, and I was trying to explain the concept of self-acceptance to them. The woman jumped up and she says, "I've got a lousy sense of low self-esteem, and you tell me to accept that?" And I said, "Yes, it is. Because if you don't accept it, where will come the motivation to grow?"
I love that. That's a powerful response.
I love that story because it really helps people get to the point.
Mm-hmm. So I derailed you from the six pillars.
Yes. The six pillars is taking responsibility for one's choices and actions. This is very important because this is where power comes in. If I'm treating myself as a victim, controlled by forces outside my control, I can't have good self-esteem, and I can't be very happy either. So what I need is the ability to own, I did it, choose to do it, take responsibility for every aspect of my life and action. I believe there's more power in that idea than any other single idea for growing self-esteem. Taking responsibility for one's choices and actions.
It's when you can own it, I feel like you have the power to change it. But if you're busy feeling helpless and abdicating your responsibility, there's no way you can do anything to fix it.
Absolutely right.
Can I interject a question, Heather?
Sure.
Dr. Brandon, I know we don't get any redos in life. We can only change going forward. You're big on communication. If you would just give me a sense, if you could redo those last years with Rand, would you have done anything differently, and could you identify what that would have been?
Oh, yeah.
What would you have done differently?
I could have been truthful to her. Much years earlier, of the change in my feelings toward her. She wanted a kind of relationship that I was not up for, but I felt I should be. And
so you weren't owning your feelings then.
Not adequately. I didn't. No, I would make it more self-assertiveness. I didn't take responsibility for them yet. But I also didn't have the courage to stand up and speak for them.
Would it have made any difference if you had done it earlier? It might have ended things sooner. Do you think she could have handled it earlier?
No, I don't. I've discussed this with other people who knew her and know the situation. All agree it wouldn't matter what I did right. It would have been a calamity for our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wish that I'd have the wisdom and the courage to do it years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
For your own happiness.
My own self-respect, too.
That's
do you think
a challenge.
About those times anymore, or have you let that go?
Sure, I think about it. It's an integral part of my life. And I had a good time afterwards. But I regret the fact that I made certain choices that I made. As I say, I should have done them much earlier.
Mm-hmm. You covered kind of two of those pillars, self-responsibility. Let's talk more about the self-assertiveness.
Granted, but we'll talk three, not two. Consciousness, acceptance.
Sorry. I'm having the senior moment.
So far, so good.
Outstanding.
Okay, self-assertiveness. Living one's values in reality. Standing up for what one believes. Standing up for one's values. Let your values be consistent with your behavior. This is what I mean by self-assertiveness.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean running over widows and orphans to get to the first of the line. It means treating one's own needs, wants, convictions with decent respect, willing to express them in social contexts when appropriate.
What does that do for us? Go ahead, sorry.
Where it can falter is where we are afraid of people's reaction to what we are asserting. And the saddest thing is that not uncommonly that we are denying some important aspect of who we are to people we don't even especially respect, all because we're fearful of the look of frowning disapproval on the other's face.
What happens to us when we don't live in congruence with our values and we don't set those safe boundaries?
We don't
and
have
enforce
pride.
Them.
We don't have pride. We don't have healthy self-respect. We don't have healthy autonomy. And sometimes we feel shame.
And those are valuable implements or instruments of change, right? If we didn't feel shame, we would never get to be better people, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Nicely said.
Thanks.
Well, what I think is so powerful about this self-assertiveness, the way you address it by living your values in reality, is I sometimes think we fragment ourselves by becoming hypocritical to serve some other need or desire, maybe for, you know, external approval of others or not wanting to hurt someone's feelings. But in my personal life, when I haven't lived in congruence and I haven't safely asserted myself, I'm always the one that is injured, so to speak. And I find that the other person, my assumption of what their feelings or responses were going to be, are usually not even close. And had I given them the respect of my, by being honest, that perhaps I would have had a different outcome had I just asserted myself appropriately.
Yes. Yes. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm. So pillar five.
Living purposefully. Thinking through what one's goals are, thinking through what kind of actions you need to take in order to achieve your goals, reviewing your behavior periodically to see whether or not you are living in alignment with your action plan and with your goals. And finally, four, paying attention to outcome, not being what Einstein used to call insane when he said insanity means doing the same action but expecting a different result.
Yes.
Do you know where that originated? Did that originate with you? Because I hear that all the time, that particular...
Albert Einstein.
Ah, thank you for that source.
And the last one is personal integrity, because this is in some ways the most obvious. If we, by integrity, I mean that the one's professed beliefs or actions, one's experience, what we express, all the three, are they consistent? Do we walk our talk? We stand up for that which we believe is a value. Sometimes people lie or cheat or steal in order to win either money or fame or admiration, and they feel it's safe so long as only I know the truth, which is really a foolish joke, because your own ego is the strictest judge of all. You can't fool it. It knows what you may spend all your energy denying. So you don't want to be a person who's ashamed of how he lives or acts or what he does or doesn't do.
But the value is that if you acknowledge that consciously, you can move to change that.
Yes.
And become congruent.
Exactly.
In your book, you have a bunch of exercises, and I really enjoyed and received a tremendous amount of value in them. And on the show here, we do a lot of work with affirmations. Each week we have a new one. Each time we start the season over, we go through the process of setting up our own affirmations. And you used the process, and I can't remember which chapter, I don't have the book in front of me, where you have these leading sentences.
You mean sentence completions?
There you go, sentence completion.
For example, if I bring 5% more, suppose I give you this stem and ask you just to complete the stem, and then when you then say the stem again you complete it, but what you want to do is to create the half a sentence, fill in the other half, so you have a complete sentence.
So
for example, if I gave you the stem, if I brought 5% more self-esteem to my daily activities, go.
I would have 25% more value out of each day.
Keep going. Keep another stem, though. I'm in the same stem, but different ending.
Okay. So if I brought 5% more self-esteem to each day.
Into my daily activities.
I would earn more respect from my colleagues and my peers.
Good, but faster. Don't think. You don't want to think, because all you'll get then is stale stuff that you already know.
I would be arrogant, I think, if I brought more self-esteem.
That's okay. So anyway, I've devised this because we don't always know what we know. So a means, techniques have to be developed to help people to face and be aware of that which they know without perhaps in advance knowing what they know. Also, the power comes, the insight comes from the client, not from me. It's he or she who articulates the stem and then says the ending. Keep trying to do an ending again and again each time. The same stem, but different ending. Then we can go on to other stems as the progression works. We just begin with one, and that launches us. That launches us into doing more. And we can cover an incredible amount of material. For example,
but Dr. Brandon, I have a question about this. I can't just bring more self-esteem. I have to do the work that it takes, produce the bookstore, build the new capacity, getting 5% more output, so to speak, or productivity, right, to earn that new 5% based on what I'm hearing from you. It isn't just...
Of course you have to earn it. One of the ways you do that, one of the ways you do the sense, it pushes you more aware to the relevance of self-esteem in your life and in your behavior.
So are the sentence stems more to help you live consciously?
Oh, yes.
And start that cycle of self-esteem perpetuation. Because as I think of it, and I know you said not to think of it, but as I think of how I responded, I know when I'm not living with integrity. I know when I am not asserting myself. And I can see how asking myself that sentence stem and making me complete it, now I see just a myriad of things that are popping into my head of the different things, the personal values that I would get out of adding 5% more self-esteem. So the times where I do slip up on the living with integrity or the living purposefully or the self-assertiveness, I think I'm kind of neurotic on the responsibility thing, so I'm good on that category. But on some of these others, you know, I can see where adding that little 5% of value, and just as I'm thinking about it, it's making me want to rise to that occasion to be more conscious.
I have a question, just again, to go back to. You've clearly moved forward from objectivism, from what you're saying. You're incorporating a bigger picture.
Well,
in my...
I'm sorry for interrupting. Please go ahead.
Am I right that you've enhanced your worldview beyond objectivism?
In some respects, yes, but I'll tell you what particular compliment I appreciated giving from a reader. He said, "You, the six pillars is the missing link in objectivism."
Well, self-awareness is the missing link in objectivism, because that whole component that's beneath the intellect.
You see, when objectivism never told you how to get there from here.
Well, it just told you what it is.
Exactly.
But here's my question. Have you changed any of your views at all? I'm going to go very deep into the gossip columnist side of me here. Rand was born Jewish, yes?
Say again?
In Russia. God here. You were born a Jew, yes?
Not in Russia, but I was born in Greece.
But here, you were born a Jew, yes?
Of course.
And, of course, we all walk away. Does that heritage, does that history, does that awareness pull back into your life at this point?
No. No.
So religion and even cultural context is still not part of what you pull into that self?
Only in one respect, perhaps I could modify my answer this way. Many years ago, I read a book, a brilliantly interesting book called The Jewish Mystique, and I found out from that book something of the tradition of the intellectuals whose mission it was, in effect, to bring light into the world.
And
I remember walking over to Ayn Rand's house and said, "Ayn, you'll never guess what I learned today. You and I fit exactly the image of the..." I forget the word for it right now. It's a seizing moment. of the Jewish intellectual who feels that he was put on earth, or she was put on earth, to become signposts to the good life.
Well, I certainly think both of you contributed to that enormously. It is a somewhat ironic twist that would be a collateral source for the inspiration. Do you miss it at all?
I'm sorry?
Do you miss it? I'm Jewish. I think I would miss it. Forget the religious part. I would miss the attachment. I would miss it if I didn't have this cultural backdrop in my life. But you do not.
No, I do not.
I admire that. I think it's a strong person who sets their own path as you have, as she did, even changing your names. You defined yourself as you wanted to be. I like that.
That's true. You're completely right about that.
How does spirituality fit in with self-esteem, or doesn't it? Should spirituality be cast aside?
I wrote a whole book to answer your question, and the book was called The Art of Living Consciously. And in that book, I addressed the issue of, got into the issues of spirituality and religion, among other things.
Mm-hmm. Do you still love the Fountainhead?
Sure. I still love all of it.
So who are you in Atlas Shrugged? Who do you see yourself as? Who did she see you as? Were you Galt?
I don't think she ever thought of me that way. She thought of me as... There is in the Talmud a wonderful statement that I want to give you, adapted to me. It could be Joe Doakes, but let's make it me.
Okay.
The Talmud says to Nathaniel Brandon, when you go to heaven, it won't be angels asking why you did not become Moses. They will ask you why you did not be Nathaniel Brandon.
Okay.
Do you understand that?
I do. I didn't know that was Talmudic teaching, but that's why didn't you become what you could have been? It's a moving target, yes, what we could be?
No, it's not. Why didn't you be what you could have been? And why you couldn't be Nathaniel Brandon?
What you are.
Huh?
I'm missing. You. The angels are asking you...
They will not ask you why you did not become Moses. Why you are not Moses. They would ask why you are not Nathaniel Brandon, meaning you are not living up the best within yourself.
Yes.
Your highest purpose.
You can say that, yes.
I like that.
It's beautiful. But it's a moving target, what we can be, right? It's not a fixed point.
I think that's a fair statement, yes.
But we could be a myriad of things. And we don't have to do that all at once. I mean, goodness knows I've changed my mind over and over of what do I want to be today. My common themes are all what my values are, my living with integrity, my purpose, and all of that. But how I get there and my path is different. And then when I get somewhere, I say, okay, well, that was great. I want to do something different now. This doesn't capture, you know, I was a stockbroker.
Oh, yeah, sure, this is called growth.
Well, I think that let's take a pause right now and head to our sponsors and to listen to a few more of our participants in our, gosh, I can't think because I'm so excited, our free publicity day. My brain is just overwhelmed by today's experience, so forgive me for that, Dr. Brandon. You are listening to Dr. Nathaniel Brandon on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your money mentor, and we will be back with more Dr. Brandon right after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420 or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
This is John Nowicki with LCM Capital Management, where we are changing the way the world invests. What we do is create financial plans tailored to each individual's risk parameters and retirement goals while eliminating all the additional costs and hidden fees that are associated with money management. You can contact me, John Nowicki, at LCM Capital Management at 312-705-3013. And look forward to a happy, healthy retirement with low costs and low fees.
Have you seen commercials for agencies that want to charge you a fee to settle your debt? Did you wonder if you could trust them? My name is Kenny Goldie, and I'm here to tell you you don't need to pay anyone to settle your credit card debt. You can call your bank directly and do it yourself for free. How do I know? I did it. I reduced my own credit card debt from over $200,000 to zero, and I want to tell you how in my book, The Do-It-Yourself Bailout. Visit SettleYourCreditCards.com. My readers have settled nearly $1 million in credit card debt by themselves, no agencies, no fees, and you can too. Go to SettleYourCreditCards.com and read The Do-It-Yourself Bailout.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome back to the broadcast. You are listening to Dr. Nathaniel Brandon and Suzanne Cummins here on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your purveyor of prosperity, your money mentor, your hostess with the financial mostest, and I thought she was going to kill me through that break. So I'm just going to let you ask the next question, Suzanne, before you just choke the daylights out of me.
If you were going to write your own novel, what would your, and you were your own hero, what would you be? Would you be what you are now? Have you made it to that? Are you your own hero?
I don't really think in those terms. I suppose one could say yes. But somehow it just feels I don't put any estimate on it. I am Nathaniel, and that always feels good, quite enough. I don't think in terms of am I a hero or am I not. I'm sorry, I can't give you something more exciting for an answer.
No, it's, you know, there's this round world that's very much as much fiction. Our heroes were never meant to be real. I just love them, so I just wanted to bring that to this table.
The reason, the way people really ought to read Atlas Shrugged, in my opinion, they should understand the literary method, which is mythology. There's a lot in the book which is obviously unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to look at it like a mythological novel. When you're dealing with myths, you don't hammer down to in every little detail as could it have happened that way. Do you see what I'm getting at?
I do. I think she admitted that herself, that her heroes were never intended to reflect a person, but more an ideal.
Well, it would be nice enough to respect such a person if he existed, yes.
Right.
Well, I think what was fascinating for me was that I was the kid in school in fourth and fifth grade that always had all their book reports done for the whole year, and I had the stars all the way across the chart. So my teachers would give me thicker books to read, and they had to be, you know, more than an inch and a half thick in order for me to be able to read them. And so I would just go to the library and go by measurement and say, oh, this looks interesting, this looks interesting. And when I was 11 is when I read Atlas Shrugged, and I think it gave me an unrealistic idea of what a man is supposed to be like, given my self-esteem issues I had early on without my father as an example, and then the poor choices in men I made up till my most recent marriage, which I fixed all of those things, thank goodness, but I think I finally found my John Galt, but I identified with Dagny, and every year I would reread it. It was like my Stephen Covey's Sharpen the Saw, and it would get me fired up for the next year, and I've read it every year, so I've had like 28, 29 years of reading it over and over. And
Barbara Brandon did a lot of wonderful work about the Rand heroines, about Dominique and Dagny, and they were by far a leap ahead.
They were great. I think they were the best. It's the best recreation of a woman character in fiction.
I think so.
Dominique and Dagny made me fearless as a woman in business, as a woman, you know, out there in the world socially. They gave me an incredible amount of self-confidence. And when people would say to me, with regard to professional accomplishments, you know, my personal life and my intimate choices with men notwithstanding, I would say, well, what do you mean I can't do that? What do you mean I can't have that? What do you mean I can't be that? You don't know what you're talking about, because these women set such a great standard for me. So I felt like that was so important to me as who I was. And I didn't read The Fountainhead till later. Atlas Shrugged was the first one that I read. And I was in my
20s. I was in reverse. I read The Fountainhead first, but that's probably because it was shorter.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been allowed to read that in in school.
I have a I have a question about the collective, real quickly. Are you in touch with any of the people that you were connected with them, or was the break with Rand a break with Greenspan and a great break with the others?
Well, for one, I have a very strong, good relationship with my first wife, Barbara.
That's awesome.
We're good friends.
What about Greenspan? What about?
He lives in Washington. He lives in D.C. He occupies a totally different world than I do. And we met a couple of times across the years for lunch, etc. It was very nice, but not a real long connection.
So do you ever look back at your economic writings, your writings on things like Monopoly, and say, gosh, I wouldn't have put that out there given what I know today, or any of the other things?
No, I can't even imagine what you're talking about.
Well, you wrote a paper on Monopoly, for example, and said it was only caused by statism. Would you put that out there again today?
It's only possible, yes. If you understand, how could a person, or a business person, or whoever, close off legally all access to some other substance or whatever without that being enforced by a government?
Well, it does it with trust, usually. It doesn't a single individual, but it does it with, pardon the expression, a collective like OPEC or other sources. I guess you have to have the power of a government, but that's what John D. Rockefeller did with oil back in the 19th century, Standard Oil Trust.
You know, I can't get into this with you over the telephone, but may I say?
Oh, no, I just was wondering if it was still how you felt, and it is. So that's, do you study economics still? Do you think about it?
Not as much. I did so much when I was younger. I read a great deal. I kind of lost interest, meaning I care about it socially and politically, but that personally, my mind went to psychology.
Which was probably the biggest missing link that you were able to cover once you split off from the movement. What Rand called psychology was more, I think, moralizing overtone of what should, not what is. Would you agree with that?
I don't understand what you just said. Forgive me.
Oh, no, I'm not sure I said it very clearly. For Rand, I don't think she looked at what people really were. She looked at what they should be in her writings.
Yes. Could be and ought to be.
Right.
Out of all your contributions, Dr. Brandon, what do you think has been your most enjoyable for you, regardless of what the impact was once you put it out there? But what was your most enjoyable contribution?
My contribution to her or to objectivism?
Just to the planet.
The planet?
To people.
To people.
My psychological writings. That's my contribution.
They're filled with so much passion. And that's what I would have said, too. Because I just, especially because you read your, on the one that I have as an audiobook as well for reinforcement, I felt your emotion in every word, like you, that was you.
Yes.
And
what's next for you, Dr. Brandon?
Arrest.
Are you still working?
Yes, I am. Not at the moment. It's reduced somewhat, but yes.
Do you want to be?
Yes.
I want to work until I can't.
I'm 80.
Are you really? That must make me old also. And I am.
It's just a number.
It's just a number.
age is just a number. I feel like whatever you are inside, that's what you are. If you feel value out of each and every day, if you continue to contribute, that's where it is. If you're learning, you're living. And it doesn't matter. I think we transcend that at a certain point once we grow and start making contributions to everyone else. Well,
can I have one more gossip columnist question? One more question.
One more question.
Present wife excluded, who is the greatest love of your life?
Hello?
I thought you might not be able to.
Safely say this, is that Lee is very fortunate to be in where she is because she has the culmination of all of your wisdom after all this time. So I know that she's probably the one that's been treated and enjoys the stimulation that you have comparatively, because you were just still learning and growing along the way, and I think she's very fortunate to be in line where she is.
You want to hear a funny story to end this interview with?
Absolutely.
Sure. People ask how she and I met. This happened around 6 years ago. I went out one night to a big bookstore in Los Angeles, just wandering around to see what was new, might be of interest. But I wandered in the general direction of the sentence of the psychology section of books. And I saw a woman standing there holding a book in her hand, reading it. And I wandered over and I smiled and I said, "Is that any good?" And the woman said, "Good." She said, "It's incredible. This man is a god." I swear to you. This man is a god. I said, "Oh, really? A god?" She said, "He is so brilliant. He is so brilliant the way he introverts psychology and philosophy." You know, might say, "What are you laughing at?" she says to me. And then it dawns on her, side, "Oh, my God." Then she flips the picture in the book.
I love it. I love it. Oh, my gosh, that's the greatest.
Well, you certainly didn't have to waste time figuring out a line at that point. You had her at hello. That's great.
That's a tremendous story. Well, it's just been an incredible time spending with you, and I'm grateful that you stopped by to be a part of our show and shared your wit and wisdom and titillated Suzanne with all of your great stories.
Thank you.
If folks want to find you on the internet, where would they go?
NathanielBrandon.com.
NathanielBrandon.com. Well, again, Dr. Brandon, it was such a pleasure to have you here on the show. And we have so much more in store coming up for you. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your purveyor of prosperity. And we will be back in just a moment, right after this.
Hi, this is Scott Black with EmpowerU.net. You're listening to Heather Wagenhall's on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Have you seen commercials for agencies that want to charge you a fee to settle your debt? Did you wonder if you could trust them? My name is Kenny Goldie, and I'm here to tell you you don't need to pay anyone to settle your credit card debt. You can call your bank directly and do it yourself for free. How do I know? I did it. I reduced my own credit card debt from over $200,000 to zero, and I want to tell you how in my book, The Do-It-Yourself Bailout. Visit SettleYourCreditCards.com. My readers have settled nearly $1 million in credit card debt by themselves, no agencies, no fees, and you can too. Go to SettleYourCreditCards.com and read The Do-It-Yourself Bailout.
Has your cell phone or iPod ever run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Well, now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right now on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, KinesisIndustries.com.
Hi, my name is Jim Vilwalk. I'm the founder of Job Doctors International. We just released today our new book, Jobpreneurship 101, which is how to get a job when there are none. If you or someone you know needs a job, check out jobdoctorsinternational.com or call 888-420-6861. That's jobdoctorsinternational.com. When you need a job, we can help.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals, Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your hostess with the Financial Mostess, and I am beaming. This was such an auspicious day. It's like when you feel like your life just had yet another piece of its puzzle put together. Oh, that was so incredible. I'm so grateful to Dr. Brandon for stopping by and my dear friend Suzanne, who inspires me to keep going. She's like the big sister I never had. So I'm always excited to have her around. So thank you. Thanks to both of you for making today's program so great. And just know that there's more to come. I know. You're like, what? Can it get any better? But of course, it certainly can, because we have minutes on your money. So I mentioned six bold, big ways to go frugal. How far would you go to save a buck in today's tumultuous economy? Americans are finding more ways than ever before to scrimp and save, but some people are taking things to the extreme. Tell me if you are one of these. Getting rid of your car, trading in your beloved wheels for public transportation is definitely extreme if you live in the suburbs. However, doing so could save you a bundle, according to Bankrate.com. If you can walk, bike, or take public transit where you need to go, get rid of your car entirely, says Francine J., author of the Frugillionaire, 500 Fabulous Ways to Live Richly and Save a Fortune. How about take in a renter? Sharing your living space may seem unappealing at first, but it's a great source of extra income. And our dear friend Jeff Yeager, the ultimate cheapskate, says, I always encourage people to at least consider getting a home that could allow them to get some rental income, such as a duplex. He speaks from experience. Him and his wife have had renters for the past 20 years. By doing so, they were able to pay off their mortgage in 15 years instead of 30. How about downsizing your home? If you think your home might be too big, it probably is, and selling it and buying a smaller one may help you beef up your bank account. Not only will you save on your utilities because you're heating and cooling a smaller place, but your mortgage amount will also be lower, and it'll be easier for you to slash your spending because you can't buy extra stuff to put in it. Another thing is to change how you use your credit cards. If you take a pair of scissors to your credit cards, you can help plug a big hole in your wallet or purse. Jay advocates paying with cash only, or, as I advocate, because your credit report is a reflection of how well you manage your money, only put things on it that you know you're going to pay off at the end of the month, or send the check out as soon as you get home. What about buying only with coupons or going generic? Some extreme savers have taken coupon clipping to the next level, buying things only if they have a coupon and stockpiling on discounts for future use.
How about living a simpler life? Many super savers embrace the simple life, which means either foregoing the latest toys and services or waiting until they are no longer hot ticket items. That is not me. I must have. And, you know, because I'm not a big, like, shopper per se, but I love technology and gadgets, my nickname. People call me Gadget Girl. And so I always have to have the coolest PDA phone. I mean, I had the very first Palm device. And I just, as soon as the newest thing comes out, I got to have it. But that's all that's like my only real vice is technology and those cool little things. But if you can give it up, it'll add additional savings to that wallet. So if you have savings ideas, going frugal, join our forum in our chat room at www.unlockyourwealth.com and share ways that you have saved or found other alternatives to live the frugal lives so you can be financially free. And last but not least, how about saving money? Are you thinking it might be a risky deal? Michael Brush says from MSN Money, Americans are cutting their debts and putting away more money, but too often they're settling for zero returns or making investments that look increasingly risky. Here's a scarier thought, Michael says. What if putting cash in today's popular, quote, safe investments was an actually risky move? Regrettably, that might be the case. Let's run through the checklist of the most popular places to put cash and see why. Instead of stocks, investors are piling their savings into bonds, which by many accounts might be in their own bubble. Savings accounts that pay interest rates below the 0.9% core inflation rate is a rate that will rise if the economy picks up, and it will. Hard assets such as gold, which has been setting price records lately, just as it did in the economic crunch in the 70s before prices fell and stayed down for more than 20 years. Looking for safety in all the wrong places. The backdrop for all of this is that stocks in the economy appear to have put in a bottom. Yes, there have been marginal improvements, but if the recovery kicks back into gear, which many economists will expect will happen soon, investors are going to get hurt by having their money in all the wrong places. Bond prices will fall, hurting anyone who owns bonds and or is in bond funds, and anyone who didn't plan to hold on bonds onto bonds until they matured. Savings account returns would not keep pace with inflation, and hard assets can turn into hard knocks as buyers are now driving up the asset price, refocused on stocks. So these are just some food for thought. Again, all of your investments should be in line with what your short, mid, and long-term goals are to recession-proof that. And Ben Stein has a really great book out on investing, and it's kind of like foolproof investing, and I'm trying to get him on the show, and that would be super cool if he could talk about that. So just consider where you're going with your money and why. I think gold is super way overvalued, and if you did put your money there personally, I think you're going to get crunched. But if you're already there, then, hey, just average down. What can I say? When the market goes, just keep buying more, because the cheaper it gets, the more your in price will go down too. But that's a conversation for a whole nother show, because it is now time for... Yes, it is that time again where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of news that you can use, tips, tools, tricks, and information to incorporate into your life right now, today, to help you become more like the millionaires we all desire to be. We are in the process, we started this Tuesday, of talking about the law of attraction and specifically what attracts it and how to create and balance our own magnetism. We're in a three-part series about this. Now, we always talk on this show about being part of this electrified energetic world called the universe, not just the physical planet that we live on world, but in the grander scheme of things, we are all connected through energy. And everybody talks about the law of attraction and how you must attract things to you by the things that you do, by putting good vibes out into the universe to get it back. But what if your own electrochemical magnetism is off? Are you lethargic? Are you overweight? Do you smoke? Do you have chronic headaches? Do you feel fatigued? Are any of these things challenging you right now? If they are, and your energy levels feel off, it's probably because your electromagnetism is confused. There's a phenomenal book out there called The Body Electric. And I like the example that they use and this case study they did about salamanders, where if you chop off a salamander's tail, it'll grow back. It's all in the mind. We have that same potential, we just don't utilize it. And one of the biggest challenges that we have when we constantly have anguish and we constantly have what we don't want in our lives, it's probably because what we focus on expands. And if we're thinking about those negative things, that's what we're going to bring about. But part of it starts in the brain. And the other part is your physical being. What you eat, what you think, what you drink, and how you comport your life, and the types of clothes you wear, and the physical things that you wear around with other electromagnetic charges could be altering or confusing your polarity. So we talk about finding your magnetism and identifying where it is on this past Tuesday show, so you'll have to go back and download Tuesday's show. And this coming week, we're going to talk about how to balance our magnetism. And then part three, the following week, is all going to be about how do we grow and intensify our magnetic capability. We're talking about the law of attraction. And everybody talks about it, but just like Nathaniel Brandon's self-esteem was the missing link to objectivism, creating our magnetic polarity is quintessential to us utilizing that law of attraction. Think about these concepts. Take these in. Incorporate them into your everyday life. See yourself in this way as a more electrified and magnetic human being. Look forward into the future and see how differently others will respond to you with this new magnetism. Create some affirmations about this, and that is your Millionaire Minute. We are going to take a real quick break, and we will be right back for the good stuff.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches, right after this.
There is a massive tax storm coming next year. Dozens of new taxes, rules, regulations, fees, and penalties are arriving. Even the storefront tax preparers are being monitored by the IRS. What can you do? Go directly to www.cohesivetax.com and sign up now for a free strategic tax plan, and you can survive the tax hurricane. That's www.cohesivetax.com.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X for Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twoforthroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And it is that time for the Keys to Riches.
and this week's key, acceptance and affirmation.
We're starting all over from the very beginning. And I'm just so excited. I'm still, like, in awe about having Dr. Brandon here on our show. Truly, this has been my greatest show because I had the opportunity to commune with someone who is so significant to me and my life. So I'm grateful for his appearance. And I'm also grateful for the contributions that he gave for me to be able to build off of that incredible foundation and body of work to bring you our keys. So for those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. And simply put, the keys to riches are a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And this week's key is acceptance and affirmation. And what we are going to do with this key is get a hold of ourselves. This is our checkup from the neck up. We're going to do a mental intervention within ourselves. We're going to say, hey, you know what? This is too much. I can't live like this anymore. I accept that I am crummy at managing my money. Once we can say that, once we get out of denial, oh, it's not that bad. Yeah, that's what I told myself when I was 23 and I was making a ton of money. Money wasn't the problem. It was coming in by the truckloads. I was really good at being a stockbroker. The problem is it was going out with twice as many truckloads. I was making less than I was spending. And I thought that that was okay because I thought that's what rich people did. Everybody carries $30,000 in credit card debt. Everybody has a car loan that's as much as a mortgage payment. I thought everybody did that. Well, I was sorely mistaken. And back when I got into this trouble, minimum payment requirements on credit cards weren't legislated. So that meant that even though I was making my minimum payment each and every month, my balance was going up. Now they don't allow that to happen, but it'll still take you 20 years to knock out like a $1,500 credit card. And we have some great financial calculators we're going to be putting up on the website this month to illustrate exactly how long it's going to take you, and you are going to have a heart attack when you see what you're doing to yourself. I just saw a research paper done that says that when we buy on credit, we are spending an additional 120%. So if an item costs you $10 and you put it on a credit card and don't pay it off that month before interest accrues, you will ultimately pay $22 for a $10 item. So if the item was $100, you're going to pay $220. Seriously? Now, we don't think of it in those terms. If somebody said that to you up front when you went to go buy it, you'd probably be like, whoa, maybe not. I don't think I need to go out for that steak dinner tonight. Maybe I'll just go buy one and cook it at home. But we don't think in those terms. But we need to, because every time we buy on credit and we don't pay it off at the end of the month, that's what we're doing to ourselves. Every time we allow our spouses, significant others, or our children to talk us into expenditures we can't afford, we're just burying ourselves in debt, and we're kidding ourselves. Just like Dr. Brandon said, the ego knows the truth. The ego knows the truth. You can't fool the ego. But you can give yourself all of this malarkey and talk yourself into the fact that you really think that you're okay. We got to set all that garbage aside. It is time to step up, man up, woman up, cowboy up, whatever your term is, and accept responsibility. like the exercise that Dr. Brandon has us doing in the six pillars of self-esteem, you have to stand there and you have to look at yourself in the nude. And you may not like what you see, but that doesn't mean it's not there if you don't look. It's still there. A is A. Reality is a thing. Choosing to accept it is up to you. But in that power of choice and accepting what it is that you are in that moment gives you the power to then change it. If you don't accept it because you're in denial, because you don't like it and you don't want to deal with it, you can't ever change it. And you can't ever get to that point where you would want to, because you've got to get disgusted with some of the negative things sometimes. People are interesting creatures. I love studying people. And while we can have a carrot dangling at the stick, like being rich sounds good and everybody wants that, but when it comes right down to doing the work, it's all going to be based on our previous conditioning, whether or not we get there. Most people won't chase the carrot. Most people won't change until the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same. You have to get uncomfortable with where you are in order to make that move to be something else, to go somewhere else, to be somewhere else. Most of us won't change. That's just the reality. You can put all the incentives in front of somebody, but if they are not a towards valued person, they are not going to change until it's uncomfortable to be the way they are any longer. And then that's when they're going to change. And most people are like that. So given that, the longer we stay in denial, because once we admit there's an issue, then we have to deal with it. So today is our deal with it day. Look yourself in the mirror and say, I don't know anything about money, if that's your situation, or I thought I knew something about money, but clearly I don't because I've made mistakes, or I'm overwhelmed about money. Whatever your issue is when it comes to money, look yourself in the mirror, face to face, tete a tete, eyeball to eyeball, and dislike what you see. In that moment is where you have the power to then become something else. But until you look yourself in the mirror and say, this is not the way I want to be anymore. I don't like what I see. Accept it and then move to change it. The power lies in that acceptance. So what today, part of today's action item that we'll get to is about accepting it. The next part is how do we deal with realigning ourselves for the success that we were born to be? The you that you were meant to be. Just like Dr. Brandon said, that the angels aren't going to be upset that you didn't become Moses. They're going to be upset because you didn't become who you are, who you were supposed to be. But because we've been beaten down, we've been conditioned for this negativity. We've been conditioned to fail. We've been conditioned to be comfortable. We've been conditioned to wallow in misery. We've been conditioned to not try because that puts us at risk for failing in our minds. What do we know about failure? Failure isn't failure until you quit. So if you never quit, you can't fail. Isn't that amazing? And by modeling successful people who have gone before you in any given endeavor, you can circumvent that failure by following in their footsteps, tapping them on the shoulder, following them around, shadowing them, becoming the example they have given. Model that behavior. But we can't get there sometimes because who do I think I am? I am this. I am that. I'm the other thing. All conditioning that other people put on us or things that we followed, we learned, we mimicked from other people while growing up. And like Dr. Brandon says, we don't live consciously. We get up, we put our clothes on, we let the dog out, we kiss the spouse, we get the kids ready for school, boom, boom, boom. One right after another, we are on autopilot. Most of us in the world today are on autopilot. And all I'm saying is let's live consciously because, one, that's where we start accepting responsibility and we can move to change things. And number two, we need to do an affirmative action in our lives to reinforce our worthiness of our goals. Many times we don't pursue goals because we don't feel they're worthy. And most of that has to do with conditioning. So how do we change our conditioning? Well, we got to change it two ways. We got to work on the subconscious and the conscious because we have this little inner curmudgeon guy who talks us out of the very things that are good for us but require a lot of work and put us at a perception of risk that we could get hurt or fail. And so this little curmudgeon guy says, no, 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 who do you think you are? You get all fired up and excited. You listen to this show. Dr. Brandon got you so pumped. You're like, I'm going to feel good about myself. I'm going to do the exercises. I'm going to do the sentence completion. I'm totally going to, you know, stand in front of the mirror and figure out who I am, good, bad, and ugly. And then I'm going to work to change those ugly things that I don't like. And then you get all fired up and you run into your spouse. Who do you think you are? You know you're not going to do that. Oh, zing, arrow one to the heart. And then you guys get a little corruption inside of you that says, oh, my gosh, who do you think you are? She's right. He's right. You can't be whatever. You are what you are. And then we let that stuff start. So what we have to do is quiet that chatter, convince that curmudgeon that we are worthy of the goals that we choose. Because some of our goals are going to take a little bit longer than others, and we have to have the perseverance and the chutzpah to stick with it. So how do we do that? Well, first, we have to convince ourselves that we're worthy of it. We've got to delete those old patterns. We need to not allow ourselves to say negative things to ourselves, and then we need to replace all of those negative cycles and all those negative patterns with ones that support ourselves and our goals and our self-esteem. We have to build that up, and we have to do it consciously through repeated exposure. It's like that piece of music you can't stand, that song that every time you hear it, you're like, oh, my God, I hate this song, but before you know it, because you've heard it so many times, you know all the words, and you find yourself singing that song, even though you hate that song. You're singing that tune, and you're like, dang, I hate this song. How did it happen? Through repeated exposure. So what we are going to do is use that power of repeated exposure to take us to the next good level that we deserve to be at. We deserve wealth. We deserve personal choice and freedom. We are worthy of that. Don't let anybody else steal your sunshine, rain on your parade, destroy your opinion of yourself. Because you are your biggest critic. And you can do that all by yourself. You don't need any help. But these other people just reinforce that. So I have created the six P's to affirmation success. I've taken about the six elements of an affirmation so we can put our own together. And we're going to do these affirmations regularly in order to get that negative self-talk out and replace it with this great positive self-talk. So then before you know it, we'll be singing our own praises. And it's so great. So there are six things that go into a successful working affirmation. I'm going to run through them real quick, and then I'm going to show you how to construct them. And if you haven't already signed up for your free key membership at www.unlockyourwealth.com, you need to go there and do it right now because Elena is going to fling this affirmation strategy up there today after the broadcast. And then you can download it, and you can begin the affirmation process for yourself. And there's the assembly, and then there's the additional sheet that helps you list all of them. So when we go to practice our affirmations and say them over and over and over again, then this is how we're going to do it. And we're going to use this way to keep them all on the same page, but use this first part to structure it. So the six P's to affirmation success are personal, present tense, possible, positive, precise, and practiced. Affirmations must be personal in order for them to work. You cannot affirm something for someone else. So they all must begin with the word I. You can't do an affirmation for your kid to get good grades, because it's not going to happen. That's not about you. It's about them. So I, this is about me. Present tense, whatever it is that you are trying to affirm in your life, you must act as if it's happening now. So it must be a present tense verb. I am, I have, I do my affirmations every day. I have $1,000 in my emergency fund. I am a successful business person. I am a great father, mother, son, daughter, brother, sister. It must be present tense, as if it's already happening, because then if the brain thinks it's happening, it's going to create the neural pathways to match that activity if it doesn't already happen. So great how that works. Then it must be possible, meaning it's within your own power to do it. You cannot do an affirmation for someone else. It is not possible for you to control the outcome of the lottery. You can't say, I am a lottery winner of $100 million, because it's not possible for you to control that. Your affirmation must also be in the positive frame. Because the brain doesn't hear the word no, statements like, I don't want to be poor, if you take out the no part of it, it says, I do want poverty. So we can't structure it. What we need to say is, I am wealthy. We must say what we want, not what we don't want, because we always get what we say we want. The brain is so amazing and so powerful. It's the most powerful computer in the entire universe. And we always get what we say we want. So if we're getting garbage in our lives, it's because we're putting garbage in. We're saying things like focusing on what we don't want instead of what we do want. So it's got to be positive. It also has to be precise. I am wealthy, while it is positive and it's got all the other attributes, it's not precise. It's not defined. What is wealthy to you? Spiritually wealthy? Financially wealthy? If it's financially wealthy, what is that? Is it that I have $1,000 in my emergency fund? I have 6 months' worth of income in my emergency fund. I have a year's worth of income in my midterm savings vehicle. I have a $1 million net worth, whatever your number is. It must be precise. When it's precise, the brain can send its message to the universe, and the universe can then deliver it. What do you want? I have a car is vague. I have a new electronic vehicle, an energy-efficient vehicle. What are those things called? Hybrids. Or it could be, I have a Toyota hybrid. I have a Ford hybrid, and whatever the model is. So specificity is so important, because when you're vague, it leaves the universe room for interpretation, and you might not get what you thought because you were vague. You'll sort of get what you want. I am a lottery winner. Other than it's incorrect, what if it's just $2 and you were thinking $100 million? You need to say whatever it is. Got to be articulate in your goals. I am a millionaire. My husband's definition of a millionaire is anybody who has made, borrowed, or lost $1 million. Doesn't mean you have to possess it now, but if you've made it, if you've borrowed it, or you've lost it, it constitutes being a millionaire. So more of us are millionaires than what we think. Isn't that amazing? We've got to be careful how we structure our conversations with ourselves. And the last but not least of this affirmation process is it must be practiced through repeated exposure. Is how we're going to gain that confidence, how we're going to convince that inner curmudgeon that we are worthy of the goals we have set for us, that our goals are worthy of our time and investment personally in pursuing them. Think about torture. Think about how torture was used in concentration camps during wartime to get information out of people or to get information to get people to become double agents. How does that happen? They wear you down through repeated exposure. Most of these techniques are all psychological. Repeated exposure will make you believe anything. Why don't we program ourselves with the things that will make us successful? It seems so obvious, but sometimes it's totally elusive. It may be obvious, but if it doesn't occur to us, what good does that do? But now that we know these things, we can take and incorporate them. So, again, this is our featured strategy for this week. So download your affirmation strategy and your worksheet to collect all of those strategies and put them in one place so you can do them several times throughout the day. So this repeated exposure is the first time you do it at night before you go to bed. So you set up your subconscious mind to work on all of those things that you want to bring into your lives, and it will create all the new neural pathways while you're getting restful, restorative sleep. And then when you wake up in the morning, don't roll over and kiss the spouse or let the dog out or start the kids' breakfast. No, you're going to pull out your affirmation worksheet, and you are going to read your affirmations out loud to yourself to focus your mind on your higher purpose of the day, your conscious mind. Needs to be focused on your higher purpose of the day, not running errands, dropping kids off at school, making husbands and wives lunches, taking Susie to band practice and little Johnny to soccer and all that. No. What we need to be doing is we need to be focusing on our higher purpose, and that's creating financial freedom to do whatever we want with ourselves and our family members. And the only way to do that is to focus our conscious mind on that, too. So we have the 24/7 effect. And then the next time we take out our affirmations is anytime we encounter negativity in our lives. Do not let people rain on your parade. Tell them to keep their pity party to themselves. But if it so happens, after that negative encounter, run away to a corner, a bathroom, wherever you can get, and say your affirmations again. Because remember, what we think about, we're being about. And if they leave us with a negative feeling or emotion and we're dwelling on that, we're going to get that to expand. So we need to refocus our minds on what we do want. And so we do that by pulling out our affirmation worksheets. And, yes, it happens. We get this affirmation or we get this negative experience and then we dwell on it. We refocus our brains and then we have another one. And if it feels like you're doing your affirmations all day long, that's okay because I've had those days too where it seems like, oh, my gosh, not another negative encounter. And all you got to do is every negative encounter, just erase it and reprogram it with your affirmations. And that way you stay focused on your higher purpose. And every step you take gets you one step closer to what you do want when you stay focused on what it is that you do want. So your key statement for today is, I cannot change anything in my life until I make that first move to accept what it is that I don't like in order to change it. Your key affirmation is, I am great at structuring my affirmations. And your key action item is to sit down with yourself and figure it out what it is that you want to change. Accept that this is your current lot, but it's not your death now. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am so privileged and honored to have had Dr. Nathaniel Brandon on, also to my co-host, Suzanne Cummins, for being a part of this broadcast.
We have so much more in store for you coming up next week with the second part to our Millionaire Nuts and Bolts on Creating Magnetism. Also, visit our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Get today's strategies. Find all the other resources we have available. Facebook us, follow us on Twitter, and thank you for joining us. Finally, financial freedom can be yours. Here's to your financial independence.